This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy, Johnny G, from the South Shore of Nassau County, Long Island, standing 6'2". 299 pounds. That's right. As of this morning, he was below 300 pounds. Trying to stick with it. It's John Gabris. All you got to do is trust me. Jackson, Maine, I've been meaning to find a replacement for you. Abortion is health care. We'll never find a replacement for that. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give him a shout out. Arthur is currently resting on the couch because he was up all night shitting all over my apartment. And I was up all night cleaning it up, being a dog dad. Rules. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studios, you know him, you love him, he was my comedy guru, you know him from the Improv for Humans podcast, he's been on here three times, returning for the fourth, it's Whooping Suey himself, Matt Besser.
Yeah, I picture less hardy individuals not being, just having a heart attack with your intro, like not expecting that monster.
It's no ramp up.
It just comes.
It's fun full when blast. I have someone that like a publicist reached out to me to have on, like someone who I have no connection to, and I'm just like, and I know they haven't listened to my podcast and prep. I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna do a little intro here, and then every time I do it,
and they wonder if you're gonna be screaming the whole fucking time like you're commanding a speedboat tour.
That'd be so awesome if I kept that volume up the whole time, that intensity up the whole time.
All right, so we're talking children. You know how to bake with sunflower seeds?
I used to, when I was coming up in improv, I used to love group games that I could pretend were at a factory so I could just have like that weird high like, all right. I always thought that was such a funny thing to be like talking over noise. Without yelling, just the sort of like, all right, and if you'll follow me, you can see. Oh, Besser.
I'm a very loud individual, and that plays into our topic today, so maybe I should just let you
let's get ripping. Yeah, let's whoa, just get mean? Into it. I'm sure we'll find tangents in here, okay. So let's just get cracking.
Let's crack it.
So you wanted to... Anytime I have you on, I feel like you're ready to work through something specific. You're always like, here's the topic. And I'm like, okay, let's. And today,
what do other guests do? Do you give it to them?
No, we kind of like, and it's usually something that they're like, I mean, we're buds. Like usually someone's like, I'll talk about swimming. Like yours are always like, right? We was like fighting, arguing. Like it's like,
cold cocks. I think it was like pranks, yeah. Cold cocks. I forgot what the third was. Cold cocks part two.
But you want to talk children's sports. Now, I am nice childless, turn. But I came up playing a lot of children's sports. I have nephews that play a lot of sports now. And I think children's sports has changed in so many ways. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as it should have based on what my childhood was like. But curious... I'm assuming, I know Sid plays basketball, and so I'm assuming you've been witness to a lot of children's sports in the last few years of your life.
Yeah, I don't even know where we should start with this. There's so much to say, but yeah, Sydney, my daughter, plays basketball a lot, and she plays soccer every fall. But mainly those two team sports. I played soccer growing up because I wasn't big enough and athletic enough to even attempt to play football. And I played basketball up to the ninth grade when I just simply was not athletic enough to play
anymore. Were you tall early?
I was tall, but I was also super skinny. And there were other people just as tall with more muscles and more ability. And I was just playground basketball. I never had the way kids have fundamental classes these days. Like it's a whole different world. But anyway, I wasn't good enough at all to play basketball or football. And soccer was kind of just starting in Little Rock and Arkansas and really in what would that be, 1970, the mid to late 70s. It was kind of becoming a fad and being introduced.
Well, it's kind of proliferating through all, like, as a kid sport for everybody at that point, it felt like.
Yeah, I guess so. I always felt like in the early 80s,
everyone played soccer. Like, no matter, because I think it is because it's like, it's one ball and very minimal rules. So, like, you can have 5-year-olds play it. You can have four, you know, like, so I think it's easy, like, to, like, the rules are simple enough for kids, like get the ball over there. I feel like
that's a very important point too, John. And it everything I may say today can come back to, isn't it interesting how easy soccer is? And what when you said, what do you want to talk about? The thing that's fascinated me for the last few years, I've coached her basketball team. I've coached her soccer a little bit, and I've assistant coached her soccer a little bit. And the difference between the way girls are treated in sports and the way boys are treated in sports has been what has fascinated me. And like, I've never had, of course, why would I? Until I had a daughter, why would I have that perspective at all? I was just a boy in sports in the South. So I
in
just
the
70s wouldn't...
and 80s, yeah.
Right. So, yeah. Which is just football. And if I can't play football, basketball. I mean, that's football. And still, it's kind of like that. And I don't necessarily have a problem with that either. It's like, if that's what makes people passionate, fucking go for it. But I've just been the disparity between how people treat girls in sports and boys is fascinating to me. And the one team sport that girls get into early is soccer, and boys too. But I've had Sydney in baseball, soccer, swimming, gymnastics. I mean, we've had her in all of them, and soccer is the one that, like you say, it just seems easy. It doesn't seem like you got to figure out much.
Right. It's like on paper. It's one of those games that's like on paper simple, like, but, you know, there's so much can go into it. But it's like you can have a general like some of these other sports, if you play one position, you might not have any idea how to play another. Like in soccer, there's like some crossover there. There's some soccer you can play around. You can shoot around. You can like play, you know, you can play with 3-on-3. Like there's
you can also be totally fucking lost out on the field and be what I call butterfly. We're just kind of just out there, just kind of flying around. You're not really affecting the game at all,
which I think
people won't notice.
I think that's part of its popularity amongst young people too. Cause it's like some kids just, I feel like need that for a couple of years that are shy or timid or not really into soccer, but getting the non-playing part of team sports is probably important for. I believe team sports is important for like development, but that is
speak
so
on
specific.
That. Speak on that.
I don't know. It's just one of those things that you have to learn to be a part of something that's not like necessarily about you, and there's like a greater goal. So like that is something that I feel like, and this is me just on old man horse here. I feel like some younger generations, I'm just like, didn't you like struggle to try to start on a team ever? Like, I also think like team sports at a higher level, and I'm not saying it should be restrictive in any way, but at a higher level, it teaches you about meritocracy a little bit as well, where you're like, well, that guy's just better than me. he gets to play because he's better than me. And I can try and go get better, or I can play something different, or I could eventually play in like a less competitive league or, you know.
Hold on. What you're saying right now can also apply to solo sports though too. But what you're saying earlier is that if you don't mind, go back to, cause I totally agree with what you say. And like Sydney at first, when she was really young, like so many girls like start with dance, and she was hilariously terrible at it, hilariously terrible at gymnastics, and didn't really love it, just did it because other girls did it.
Right.
And
that's a great, by the way, that I commend that attitude and that ability in young people. I had that too, where I just tried every sport. Someone's like, we're doing roller hockey. Like, and it's like,
You should.
Like, and I think I think.
And how would you know otherwise what you're good at?
Right. And what you like, whether you're good at it or not, you can suck at roller hockey, but if you absolutely fucking love it, you can play it for 30 years, you know? And so I think team sports teaches you how to be part of a team, how to understand, and like how to process emotions in a group, even in a way too. Like, because it's weird that you're on, and it gives you, it might be a easy, like a, it's a soft step in a barrier of being shy that you have to like begin to talk to your teammates. You have to engage with them in some way. It, people count on you. And that's like something that like is, I think, a good thing to learn when you're young of like, I actually need to do this because they need me to do this. Like other people are counting on me being at the game. So I can't blow it off because I'm cranky today. Like, and I'm counting on other people and I need them to land. Like, I just think that it teaches you a lot of dynamics that maybe in adulthood would be important to keep going on, but seem to go away at some point too, where it all becomes about like the boss or the best in the best in show or whatever. I just think team sports at a young age, and I played team sports into my 30s. I played club rugby in Manhattan, and I still play in semi-competitive events of all different sorts. Now I play more solo sports like races and shit like that. But I felt my whole life that like one of my strong suits is like my ability to like mesh with people and engage with anyone about anything. And I think that comes from team sports. I
mean, is there one element you haven't said yet, or maybe you said it in a different way, but it's what we talk about in improv and sketch groups too. Like you can be a group of 8 really talented improvisers, but not work as a team. You can even get on stage and be funny individually and get laughs from the audience, but not get the extra of what a team of like believing that, you know what, if I can just give in and believe that other people have good ideas too, and not that I'll have the best idea, even if I think I'm the funniest person in this theater, if I still can believe in the force, believe behind yourself.
Bro, you're preaching.
There's something.
Yeah, I'm in agreement there because I also, whenever I step on stage, do believe I'm the funniest, if not one of the, I'm in the top
couple.
Except
for when I'm there, sure.
Yeah, except for when Besser's there, I'm like, shit, I got bumped down. I checked the cast list outside like Rudy. I go down my finger, I'm like, fuck, number 2 today. Okay, I guess I'm playing fullback.
Oh, shit, Bill Burr's here.
Oh, no, he's not great at improv, but goddamn, the dude's funny. He hates the Harold opening.
Really low ranking on the improv, but high ranking on the funny.
But I have that attitude, but I also know that a good show and what I want to get out of the show is from everybody. You know, like for the audience, for me, for my teammates, that's always more enriching. It's just a better show overall. I can do solo stuff if I really need to and want to, but that's
and
not.
I'm
what
more
I'm up
delighted.
There for.
I have that skip in my step, and that's metaphorically, but with my daughter, it's real. It is a literal skip in her step when I see her give an assist in basketball to someone, and like it took me a while to like ingrain that of like passing to the person that scores is just as cool or more cool. Check out these Sue Bird videos.
Yeah.
That's just as cool. And that's being a teammate. And that's who people want to play with is a point guard. And I tried to explain to her what a point guard was. And it's like, they pass the ball. They set up the offense for the whole team. They make the team work together. They're not just that. And that's not how youth sports plays, John, and you know that.
No, I know
that. It's like the best kid takes the fucking ball.
And it's usually not even the best kid. I mean, it is the best kid, but it's frequently, at least when I was growing up, it was the kid who just developed a little earlier than other people.
Just the bigger kid.
So he wasn't necessarily talented, but like the best kid on our soccer team just happened to have chest hair. You know, like he just was like, he had more of a man's body and physical capabilities than the rest of us. And we're like, Dave is like the best. I'm like, I don't know. Like, these two guys are like skills better than Dave. Can run and could do like 100 push-ups.
That's so funny. When you say it like that, I think back to my soccer team in high school, and I'm like, you know what? That's true. The guy that was considered the best on our team and scored at least half our goals had a man's body, was super fucking fast, was also on the track team and super fast.
Yeah.
And strong, could jump, could kick the ball a mile. Did not have great, wasn't like a guy you're like, oh, he could amazing dribbler. Like,
yeah.
There were three or four other guys much better at that. But this guy was way more athletic than everyone on the field.
That's what's cool about like when you get to like college and pro sports where people are like, they develop in their senior year of college and now, you know, or like guys like Tony Gonzalez who played basketball and then become like the number one tight end. And like, I love shit like that because you do. Everyone develops at a different rate, and in kids' sports, it's like it's more obvious than ever before. You know, like you got 12-year-olds out there. You could have a 12-year-old with a mustache and a 12-year-old that's like 4'9". Like those are two possibilities in a 12-year-old. Like, and that's an intense experience for the 4'9". Like I was fat, but I wasn't really developed. I was a big kid. I played offensive line, but I didn't grow to 6'2" until my freshman year of college, like the summer in between. So after I was done playing high school sports, I got like a 3-inch growth spurt. I went from like 5'10 or 5'11 to over 6 feet tall. And that kind of like evened me out, made me a little bit more of a jock rather than just like a little boy with B cups. And I'm like, fuck. And then I luckily, and now this will get back to kids team sports. But when I joined rugby freshman year of college, and this was really exciting. And almost an interesting like control experiment because I'm now developed. I spent my summer in between senior and freshman year lifeguarding and lifting weights. So I was just like running and lifting weights and swimming all the time. Then I go to freshman year, join the sport of rugby where everyone who's playing it as a freshman is playing it for the first time in their life. Everyone who's a sophomore, it's only their second year of playing rugby. If they didn't just so like all of a sudden none of us have like no only one guy on our team had played previously, but he was in the army, so he was like 27. And since it was a club sport, you can be like, and so our captain was like a 25-year-old former army ranger who had played before, but everyone else was like ex lacrosse kids, ex football kids who were like just looking to keep playing sports that didn't have NCAA regulations, aka drug testing, and all of a sudden, I'm like, we're all at zero. No one's parents had a rugby pitch in their backyard and they got to like, no one got special coaching. No one was on the travel team and tried to play on the high school. We were all just, and all of a sudden I was absolutely, I started playing every game my freshman year and played all 8 semesters, every single, you know, unless I was hurt, I started every game. And I was just like, holy shit, this, and it was the first time. And then with hindsight, I only got that advantage because I was that superpower I was telling you about, willing to go like, rugby looks fun, I'll go out and try that. And then I ended up finding something I truly love and I stuck with forever. But that development shit is where it changes. It's like all of a sudden it's like there's just a girl who's 5 inches taller than the other girls and it's like, she's the best at basketball, get it to her. And it's like, she might burn out, she might hate basketball, she might just be here for 2 years. You don't know that. Like, so I feel like
once you get to about Sydney's age, that stops too, because the kids with fundamentals and that are treating it seriously will, that tall girl will
find a different league, or yeah,
she better catch up. But that going back to what you said about higher level, I'm interested in when you think higher level starts, and you mentioned travel teams, and even in the soccer league, like right now she's in she's 10 and she's in a rec league, AYSO, which is a famous soccer rec league, and famous because it's big, but it's like, right, that's one where anyone can do it, no tryouts.
we had PAL soccer, Police Athletic League in New York on Long Island, which was kind of like the same thing. They just everyone who signed up, they were just like, all right, you're on this team, you're on this team, you're on, and that's your team for the season. You play against each other.
So then, the coaches draft in her league. And they're all super intense about it and have been there for years, so they know all the girls, so they're pretty well versed in who they're drafting. And there's
already taking it too seriously in my, but I guess that helps keep it.
I don't know. Let's
equal.
Talk. Let's talk about. Let me set it up. So
yeah, sorry.
There's one travel, what I call travel team girl on every team,
right?
Or maybe two, but rarely more than that. And usually, as is the case with Sid's team, they score all the fucking goals, and the team doesn't really have a problem with that, and the team's kind of into that. And the girl on our team doesn't even show up to practice because she's at her travel team practice. And she plays, like, some of the girls only play three quarters. She plays all four quarters. So it's like the parents are in, like, she can show up late, you know. Oh, there she is. So it's weird. And I guess I don't have a problem with it either because it keeps the team competitive. And without her, I know some of these games they would have gotten decimated without her there. So they needed her for parity's sake, right?
Right, and to not break their spirits about the sport, too. Getting demolished
yes.
week in and week out.
But the flip side is, if, like, she's dominating, like, I'm like, why doesn't she ever take corner kicks? She's the only girl who can make it all the way to the goal. And I asked Sid that. I'm like, she knows she's the only one. Why doesn't she ever take him? And Sid goes, oh, she says she wants to score. That's why. She just says to all whoever's taking the corner kick, she just goes, kick it to me. Like, she's so dominating.
Oh, that's
like with
crazy.
The team, like, okay, throw it into me and then I'll score and then I'll kick. Like, she's not even pretending like this is a team sport. We're all working together. It's like, I'm going to go shoot and, you know, get my sloppy seconds if you can.
See, now I don't know where I fall on this because I think if I'm outside, I think I could, if I'm being fully objective.
Yes.
I think it's, you want everyone to get playing time. But the draft thing makes sense to me a little bit now, because then it's like, if you get accidentally, by random, get four travel team kids on one team, that team just destroys the league, and it's like,
yes. And
not
I've,
as fun.
I've been
for
in
people.
That kind of league in basketball, and it destroys kids' spirits.
Yeah.
They get beat 30-0 in a basketball game. They don't want to play anymore.
It makes sense. I don't know how I feel about, like, if I was the coach or I had the coach's ear, I'd be like, hey, like, let's get it around. You know, like, we're still only 10. You know what I mean? Like,
you know what I think they would say? Because that's how I coach. When I coach, I don't coach the soccer team, but I coach the basketball team. And if a kid was doing that on my team, I'd say, pass the ball, man. You got to get out there and pass the ball. There's no doubt what Coach Matt thinks about that. But the soccer league has a little different spirit, and it goes towards what I was saying earlier about how girls and boys get treated differently. Because I'm coaching a co-ed basketball team. And they're like, I think he would say, if you said that as the parent to him, my coach, who's actually a pretty good guy, and most of the coaches with the philosophy would say, I'm letting them make their own decisions.
Ooh. Yeah. I mean, shit, that is hard to, but like, I get that. But there is an element now, and I'm not a parent, but there is an element to, like, we don't have to let 10-year-olds make all their own decisions. Like,
well, that's the flip side, John. I'm trying not to lead you, because I was on a travel team where I say I was, because that was the one where I was not a coach. I was only a parent on that, because they have real fucking intense coaches. And Sid was with older girls. She was the youngest girl. They never let her do certain things. And the coach would see that happening. And he, for sure, his philosophy outright was, they control themselves. And I was like, are you ever going to assign who's the point guard and who's the forward? And he's like, they'll figure that out.
And well, that's not how it works at any, like, once you get, like, at higher levels, that's not how it
works. That's
what
I said to the other parents, and they would kind of argue with me and go and look at me like I was against the process. Like, you got to believe in the
process.
And they are, John.
Yeah.
And they say, hey, you know, we're not coaches. We're not experts. We don't know. You just got to let them. And it's just the biggest and most alpha of the girls just controls things is how it happens.
Right. And to be fair, that is a good learning experience, because that will be sort
That's
of life a little bit in a way. But you want,
Where does that start? So that goes back to my question. What age, and you said higher levels. So that's what we're talking about. At yeah. what point do you
see and
do
here's
children
my,
become teens
young adults or whatever,
or,
yeah.
Or when I took a class in college called Sports and Society, Professor Alan Gutman, and he was very inspiring. He also taught Jewish American authors, so two of my favorite courses.
That's but, awesome.
But he's kind of the expert on the difference between game, play, and sport.
Ooh.
And like we would talk, and he would talk about this is what game is, and this is what means to play, and those are all three different things. Like play is just game is like organized play. And then sports is putting competitive rules on game. And then after that, we'd have to bring him here. And I almost emailed him today when I was going to be on your podcast, but I had the same anxiety I had back in college. If I'm going to ask a stupid question and he's right. going to say he doesn't understand what my question
right.
is.
What are you asking me here? And you're just like, fuck, delete. Change my email address.
I had my fucking freshman anxiety in college again. I'm going to ask a dumb
question.
I
forgot to do the paper, Professor Gutman.
But I pretty much wanted to ask him like when, because... And they kind of in soccer in a lot of these leagues have different philosophies of, well, we don't even keep score at this age. And now we're keeping score, but if they're up by 20, we turn off the scoreboard. Or now, or we are keeping score, but we're not following certain rules. Like in basketball in the rec league, they'll let these kids travel. But in the travel team league, there's no fucking way you can travel. And it's the same age. It's the exact same age.
Interesting. I guess my answer to that would be, I don't know if there's an age cutoff where the shift happens. I feel like that's the design of the I want to say curriculum, but I guess I mean like sports program, like the soccer
yeah,
program. At,
sure, it is. And there's different flavors out there.
Right. And so that's why I'm curious, because like I feel like up to a certain age, we should just be pushing like everyone's
do
learning,
everything.
Everyone's having fun. Like, yeah, not there's not just one goalie. Like we got to rotate in at goalie. Like everyone should
well, check it out. That's literally a rule in AYSO that. What is she in? She's in 12 and under now. She was in 10 under last year. You could not have a goalie in goal more than one quarter. This year, you can only have them two quarters, and people start to do it too. They take advantage of that. And then the next age group, there are kids who are just goalies.
Yeah, that was me. On my travel team, I played the goalie. I mean, I would sometimes end up playing D or something like that too, but I played goalie for the Belmore Black Sharks for like 4 years or whatever.
And when does... This is when my fascination started back in soccer a few years ago. I was standing on a sideline in between two games, and they were the same age group. But literally to my back, you know, 5 feet behind me was the boys' field of 10 and under. So you could hear their parents and their coaches, and their huddle was right next to our huddle every time they had a timeout. So I could hear their coaches and their huddle and their parents. I could hear the whole vibe of their sidelines. And ours had this really, what I would call a quiet, fragile vibe on the sidelines. And whereas the boys' coach is like, guys, you're not playing defense out there. You can't just stand in one spot. And I'm just trying to get the tone of the guy too. He's not going, God damn it. But he's also not going, guys, let's go out there, and if you can play defense a little harder. So yeah. There's different tones.
It's not
to approach
just volume,
it.
Though. It's a little bit of
it's,
like
it's attitude.
You're understanding. I'm commanding here a little. He's like being commanding.
Like, guys, come on! I've told you. And there's all I can give the same note in 10 different tones, and at one tone you go, okay, that's too much. Now you sound like you're angry, and this is just a game with kids. But then in another tone, but. Another time, you're like, these kids aren't listening. They need, it's like a teacher.
Yeah, and he's
on Monday. The
teacher is
going to have
defense.
The same,
right.
same tone.
Settle
like,
down, yeah.
Settle down, in, guys. Yeah. You're not listening to me teach math. You're not going to have a problem with that. So sometimes the coach has to, and doesn't have to be angry, but it can be louder, or it can be what would be called negative. You're not playing defense well. I can say that in a quiet, yeah. guys. You're out there and you're not playing defense well. We're behind by 1 point, and you guys want to win the game, we got to play defense better. And then on the opposite, the other sideline, they go, you know what? That's negative. Don't say that. Let the girls make their own decisions.
Right.
I'd be like, well, at what age are we going to explain to them that they can't yeah. kick the ball from a goal kick into the penalty box? They got to clear it to the sidelines. At some point, you have to explain that to them. So,
yeah.
Ooh, yeah, AG1. Ooh, man, I am recording this ad first thing in the morning. So, sorry, I'm going to stop doing my Macho Man impression. Look, listeners, you know I'm a fan of AG1. You've been on the podcast. You've been listening. I've been talking about them on the podcast for a year, and I've been consuming AG1 for more than a year. I started doing it every single day, and I felt the real difference in how my day was kicked off. And I don't know if it's psychosomatic or it's at, you know, it doesn't even matter. If it is psychosomatic, then that's good. Results are results. And it's since AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs, like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has been the lead of the future of foundational nutrition. Tweaking their formula to create smarter, better weight. I tell everyone to my, you know, I got my brother on AG1. I gave him, he used my promo code and everything. I got people taking AG1 because I'm constantly talking about it, and I'm going to just talk to you about the same thing. I can't take pills in the morning. It makes me nauseous, and I don't want to eat breakfast first thing in the morning. But it's pretty easy to smash down a AG1 bev with prebiotics, probiotics, digestive enzymes, adaptogens, vitamin C, zinc, all this stuff that you need, and getting it smashed down first thing in the morning. It tastes good. It goes down easy. I have it before my coffee, and it's just a good way. I like to take that first healthy step. Now, I'm up first thing in the morning, and I'm popping my AG1. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. So try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/mighty. That's drinkag1.com/mighty. Check it out.
It's interesting. Also, we're getting into like the territory about like gendered kid sports too, which is like, I'm assuming, especially as we learn more and more and about gender and all that, I'm assuming it's on that that's bound to change. Because I like the idea when you said that there's a co-ed basketball team. I think at young ages, I feel like that is probably helpful for everyone to just be around.
Why? Why is that good for a girl?
I don't know.
I agree with you, but tell me why.
Why I think so is because if it's just all boys or just all girls, they certain behavior or certain attitude. Like, I feel like real life, if you're playing soccer with all boys, you got to go to class with boys and girls. Then you got to go to work eventually
you know what the numbers are out there. So in soccer, there are baseball. I'm just talking team sports. There's enough kids doing it that you can have an all-girl softball league pretty young. And you can have all-girl soccer for sure young at 5. Right. And have in Sydney's league easily 12 teams to 24 teams. And that's just like Glendale. It's not even like Pasadena next door. So that's a lot of fucking teams,
right.
Just all girls. In basketball, in a basketball rec league, guess how many all-girl teams you can get?
Oh, I don't know.
Just guess.
4.
two, if you're lucky, to play each other every weekend.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a little frustrating.
Now, why? Now you tell me why, and I'll tell you the other sport out there that's in between the two is volleyball. And if you watch the numbers, that's the sport that as they get older and towards high school and they get sick of soccer, that's the team sport they go to is volleyball, from what I've read.
I don't,
but
yeah,
not
I feel
basketball.
Like-
so why? And Sid has played co-ed basketball, what you're talking about, but it's always one girl, dude. Just one girl and nine boys on a 10-person team every fucking time.
1990s improv rules. Like, that's fucking crazy.
But I feel like that was, when I was a kid, it was one girl on every team in the 70s. In the 80s. That's the same fucking...
Right.
In basketball. So why is that? And I know a couple of reasons why, but why do you think?
I don't know. I mean, maybe I would assume that might be on the change with like the proliferation of the WNBA a little bit, like if that's gaining popularity, because there's just not that visual of like of women playing basketball either, you know, like in media or in, you know, like women's soccer has been a thing since I was, you know what I mean? We had Mia Hamm when I was a kid, like that was always like and U.S. women's were always good. And I feel like. Is it because I feel like in my head and maybe this
that would make sense if baseball was because with soccer that plays out the logic you just said soccer right. versus WNBA.
Right.
But you can't name one professional softball player, can you?
No,
I don't know if there is such a thing. And there for sure are more softball teams at the age Sydney's at right now. Well, one thing about baseball, and we have already talked about this, it's just easier to do soccer and not be good at it up till a certain age.
Right. Baseball is like
but
a little...
But not basketball. When you suck at basketball...
Yeah.
And you're out there on the court, it's so...
You're one of five
obvious.
Rather than one of 11.
Yeah, and it can fuck up the game. It's more embarrassing. I sucked at baseball, and I remember just being out there and going, oh, my God, I just fucking suck, and I'm embarrassing myself.
Baseball's really specific because it has that solo element where you're up there alone, and and it's like there's no blaming anyone if you strike out. Like, it's not like, well, you know, do you know my baseball nickname, my dad and, like, the other player, they called me Sony because I was the walkman because I never swung. Like, I was so afraid to strike out that kids couldn't pitch that well. So I would just bet on walks all the time. I would just kind of stand there with my bat and never fucking swing. Then they would put me in right field and I would never fucking catch anything. It was like so humbling. I hated baseball, but it was like a thing that in my age or maybe in the 90s or maybe it's Long Island, but it was like you played soccer and baseball up until you chose to start playing football. Yeah.
Yeah. You played baseball first when.
Yes.
In my day.
Played t-ball.
And
t-ball.
And I was so bad at it that I'm glad I didn't stop playing sports because like I have very vivid memories. My two memories are both. I think I would take wild swings and I think. My two big memories on offense is I hit the ball. I just luckily, you know how there's no outfield and it just keeps rolling into the next field.
Hits the second baseman on another game.
There's an incline and there's a fucking hill.
I'm well aware. Four baseball diamonds all facing each other. Just no one praying. A kid hits a dinger and hills a fucking outfielder in the other team.
Goes into a flower pot and a fucking raccoon comes out with the fucking baseball on its head. So one time I did that and I was rounding the bases, first base, second base. And I'd been to first base rarely, never a double. So I'm rounding second, third base. It's still out in the fucking outfield. I'm coming into home. My coach is not believing in me. And he's telling me to stick or he's saying some baseball term. Like stick on third or slide, and I don't know what the fuck he's saying. And I'm just looking at, he's yelling. He might be yelling Klingon at me. I have no idea what he's talking about. And I'm rounding third. I'm almost to home, dude. And the ball's still nowhere near. My team's yelling, trying to explain to me what I should be doing. He's saying stay at third. Everyone's screaming at me. Instead of doing a fucking home run, I'm almost there. I run back to third.
Because you're just like not fully confident in what you're supposed to be doing.
I have no idea what's going on. So everyone, I think it's awesome. And all of a sudden everyone's screaming at me and mad. And then that same team, because I quit after this year. I like you said, right field. I got hit two and I put my glove up. I feel like I've told you this story. And I caught the ball. And I wasn't aware that I caught the ball. Like, it just kind of went shunk. And then I just, like a kid, put my glove to my side. And I thought I'd missed it. So I'm looking at my feet, looking for the ball. But it's in my glove.
Bro, and I straight up had the same thing happen to me. I just closed my eyes, turned my head, and put my hand up. And I felt the ball hit my mitt. And my dad, like, my family was blown away that I never had made a play before. I was like, I think I was a little afraid of the ball, and I wasn't great yet. I wasn't, like, athletic at this point, so I wouldn't even, like, move for it.
But I didn't get the concept you could tag up and then run. And so I think, like, and when I finally went, oh, it's in my hand, and I think I'm a hero, everyone is, again, angry and screaming at me.
One time I was up at bat, bases loaded, my team was down, or we were tied, something like that. And it was like the end of the game, and my dad's like, my dad rarely ever can make it to these things because they were on weekends or after school when he would be working. And he was just like, good luck out there, Johnny, or whatever. And I got fucking creamed in the shoulder with the ball, and the team but it brought in the runner, and everyone was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, that, like, I did something good just by getting hit. I was in so much pain, but I was just like,
way to do
I was like,
good.
Yay, people like me.
Yay. I'm a human wall.
They're all cheering for me, the Walkman.
So back to what you were saying about rejection, and that is a bit losing, learn to lose, be a good loser. And that, back to what my professor says, that's the difference between play. There's no loser in play.
Yeah.
So then game, it's like, well, there's going to be a loser day. In sport, no, there's going to be a loser. We're going to keep track of it. There's going to be standings and a score and stats and very, very specific rules that people get angry at. Yeah. And the way they treat it, so I feel you treat just like improvisers again. You treat people at whatever level they fucking are, and you try to make them better. So if I have a kid on my team who's never played, my goal for the season is let's have this kid score.
Right.
And if there's a kid who's awesome and on a travel team, let's teach him how to do a pick and roll. Like there's not so many kids. We can't have different goals, but you'll have some parents. This is what I've come up against, where like I've been on teams where we lose almost every game and teams where we win almost every game. So I've been on both sides of this, but like our second to last team, Sid's team, won almost every game. And it was an almost all girls team in a co-ed league because I had finagled it that way. And they all passed to each other, and that's why they would always win. And all these other teams would have boys who were really good, but they didn't pass, and they would shoot from 3 points all the time. It's just hilarious. They just jack it up like fucking Curry. And they get it in like every fifth time, and the fucking crowd goes, and I was like, oh my God. But it's like, yeah, but he's missing
he's 20%
most of his shots, man, if he's lucky. We're at 1 out of 10, more fair. But, and my girls had a plan to pass and get it down low to the tall girls who would shoot from 2 feet away and score more.
Hell yeah.
So we would fucking rack it up. Like I told you, they turn off the scoreboard at 20 points. And we were dogging this one team one day. And as a coach, all I'm doing is talking to my team. I'm like, all right, now get back on defense, arms wide. That's all I'm thinking about. I'm not thinking about the other team and what the score is at all. I'm just thinking about each girl and what their goal is. So we're up by like, I think it was 16 one day. And we just scored a point and gone up by 16. I was like, all right, get back on defense, arms wide. And now these parents are getting really tired of me on the losing team. And this dad goes, starts going, you're up by 16. You know you're up by 16. And I'm ignoring him. I'm not looking. He's like 10 feet away. He's also near Danielle. You're up by 16. I'm not looking at him. I'm like, what does he want me to do? Tell my girls to stop playing hard? Like,
yeah, that's where it gets, because you don't want to run up the score, but you like the girls got a game this weekend. You want them to be able to play the game.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
And you can put in your like B-side teams or put in a couple of subs, but...
We had no B-side.
Right.
We're all good. Yeah. That's why we're winning every game, because we have good girls who pass. So anyway, I'm ignoring this dude, which is good of me, because there's the bad map.
Oh, yeah.
We've just gotten into it with him right away. Well, hold on.
Okay,
hold your hat.
You can go to previous episodes to prepare yourself.
Throw down your ellipses.
Dot, dot, dot.
So I also have this recorded too, so I could back it up. But he's, because I record the whole game, and you could hear him going, you're up by 16. You're up by 16, you know. You know you're up by 16, because he thinks I can't hear him. And meanwhile, Sydney steals the ball from their team and goes all the way and scores again. And I go, 18.
That's for them to understand that like you're not intentionally running up the score, but it's not going to help the girls to play half-assed either. Like you can only do so much. Like all right, pass more. Let's try some of our plays now that we're up. Let's move so and so. Let's move.
Like
Christine
I said, that
to
was two seasons ago. I'm on a team this season that like half the kids are newbies, and it is almost completely boys. And I always say that because they don't pass to girls, and that's what bums me out. But we get beat by 20 points. I don't get angry at the other team because I see, well, the other team has boys that are bigger and play longer. What are we going to fucking do?
Right. That's the
thing.
You can
only try your best and be the best that you can be.
And at that level, like one good player swings an entire game, you know, like. One good person in a 5-on-5 kids game, like they can just absolutely dominate.
Our last game, our team, which Sydney couldn't be there because she was playing soccer, actually, but I was still coaching the co-ed team. We lost by 3 to the best team in the league, who we lost by to 20 before. And every player on my team scored like 2 or 3 points, except for one or two players who have never scored the whole season. But on their team, only one player scored all their points, and they won. He was like LeBron James. So I felt, and our team was bummed out afterwards. I'm like, guys, you guys played great, and and a lot of you scored, and you all were passing and played great defense against a team that all the boys were bigger than you. And they beat you by 20 last time. And that one boy scored. How do the rest of the boys on that team feel?
Right. And that's the thing you like love as a coach. You want to be able to instill in the kids, like, I'm glad you guys want to win. That's a good attitude to have. It is okay to be bummed that you lost, but did you really lose? Like, think about what our goals are. Think about, like, where we were and where we are now. And, like, that's like powerful stuff to be able to convey to a young person, you know?
But I also, we were talking about earlier about the soccer team and having the kid that does everything. And are you happy about that as a parent? I'm like, well, if it keeps them competitive. But like on this team I'm talking about, it definitely kept them competitive, but it was also selfish, and they didn't need him to keep them competitive.
Right.
They had other good kids on the team. So it is a strange line, but also, it is when when do you start following the rules? When do you start having a winner and a loser? When do you start scoring points and you allow a team to get whooped?
When do you gender the teams? When do you like break up co-ed? Like that's
and,
those
and
are
when
all
you have a kid be on the bench the whole time, like a whole game. I think in school, is that immediate? We're not to that yet, but in seventh grade,
I don't know about when I seventh grade sports for me, they always did. There was A, B, and C team. Jeez. So like if enough kids played lacrosse, you would get in as the C team. But some of us were so bad on in junior high lacrosse, we were called the Ducks, the unofficial D team. And the coach would just be like, and the Ducks go over there and practice long passes. And we would just like never really get to participate in lacrosse at all. Like just kind of me and my one buddy, Sanford, just throwing the fucking ball back and forth to each other for like half an hour. It's like, wow, this is much better than being home, I guess.
So at what point as a parent do you go, are you righteous or not righteous to go, hey, my kid is in the seventh grade and he's on the middle school, whatever team, and he hasn't played six games.
Right.
He just hasn't even gotten in. And what? And the coach is like, yeah, that's sports and there's a winner and a loser and you play the game to win. And I, as a coach, have to put in the best players. When does that stop?
Like
that's what
I don't
say,
know how important like
say.
Winning. Like I guess when you get to varsity or whatever you want to call that, I think that's when all that rides out because you might not make varsity. Like you know you might make varsity and ride the bench.
What's varsity? Varsity in middle school?
No, that was in high school. We had JV and varsity. Like varsity was technically 11th
and
12th graders.
You can't.
Because I think
you're
not you gotta
considered
let people
competitive until you're
I think
a
you
junior
be
in high school.
I think you can be competitive and still make a conscious effort to give everyone minutes for a while because that's important. Like that, there's competition, but it's still development. You know what I mean? It's not like rec league fundamentals where it's like, all right, everyone get out there. But you gotta let the bench riders get some. There's garbage time in every game. Throw them in, you know, like get people out in garbage time. Like no one has to be out. Or
that's not necessarily true. If you're the team that's behind a lot, like if I played in rec league, there's rules. You have to play them a certain amount of time, so I don't have a choice in it. But if I had the choice, this last season we were behind all the time. So if I was going to try to catch up, unless we're behind by 20. But if we're always behind by like six,
right?
I would want to have my best lineup in.
Yeah, and you want to keep your best lineup in because, and this is where the objectivity comes in, because you want this kids' co-ed basketball team to win.
They do too, John. And in fact, the kids do more. It's hilarious because I told you they turn off the scoreboard.
But they're still keeping track,
on the winning team,
right?
They're like, hey, coach, the scoreboard's broken. What's going on? I have to explain it to him. Well, when you're up by 20.
Yeah.
We don't give a shit. Where's my fucking score?
Right. Well, I mean, that's tough.
I had to suffer being a loser last week. Let me be a winner this week.
Right. It's complicated because for the reasons you're mentioning, but I also, what's the end goal here with the team, right? Is it to get them to like basketball? Is it to get them to learn basketball? Or is it to have a great record in your fifth grade travel team? Like, that's where I come at it from. Like, I think, you know what I mean?
I think
like,
if to answer that question, I think if you're always competitive, you don't feel totally lost, you can still have a good season and lose almost every game.
Right,
so
right. As long as you're not getting blown away. Yeah.
But if you're on a team where you feel like, oh man, this is just rough. We're just getting fired on
Man, I kind of want to coach a team like that. I want to coach a kids team that's getting demolished because I think I could bring.
They need coaches. Every rec league needs. Every rec league needs coaches.
I can't with this face and no kids. No one's gonna want me to coach. Like I got like van face. Like I can't.
Oh, dude, let me tell you. there were some guys in this YMCA. Well, I shouldn't be talking.
My brother was
there's
a
some
teacher.
Guys who are like, oh, whose dad are you? And they're like, I'm not dad. I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay. No practices at coach's house. Yeah, that's, I mean, that makes sense because there are people who have the skill set, you know what I mean? Like, and why not apply it? But that gets, I don't know. I would be uncomfortable. Like, I would be fine coaching like my nephew's team.
Right.
Here's something I want to talk about kids' sports. Mm-hmm. Tell me if you see this at all in your experience. The kids who are wrapped up in the sort of accoutrements around the actual sport. Like my little nephew's in a flag football league that is like, he's like seven, but it's like weirdly competitive and like everyone takes it super seriously. And like the kids all wear like Nike. They have like a sweatband on their forearm. They do like the eye black, and it's all about like looking cool, like TikTok and Instagram athletes and like professionals, how they look when they're like, and the kids are drinking like, you know, I want Gatorade. Like they all, like everyone's like, they're doing all the stuff that's like kind of around, and they are learning the fundamentals and playing flag football and getting good and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an element where you want to be like, but there's plenty of time down the road. But these kids are also like in seven-year-olds, and they're like, have like a private quarterback tutor come over and like, because their parents are fucking, I mean, this is also Long Island over other places too.
Okay.
But I feel like in LA where there's some money and some people who have connections, like you could imagine if you're like, you could hire a basketball, like a UCLA basketball kid, ex-UCLA basketball tech coach. And you're like, at what point, like, is that too early or too much? Or like, it's, I guess coming at it from a non-parent perspective, parents who are like too aggressive, caring is one thing, but like pushing the kid, I'm not saying anyone really does this either, but that's the shit that kind of gets me. I'm like, now what are we even doing? You have 15 more years of basketball to play, and this is what it's like now in fifth grade. Like, what does this mean going forward?
Well, that's a big question.
Do you see that at all with like kids who are like about the way they look doing it? I mean, I guess that's always.
I don't know much about the whole soccer scene, I guess, but Sydney, I think I'm gonna back up a little bit. We were saying kids should try everything. Eventually, you see your kids spark to certain stuff, and some stuff they like, and they're not that great at. Like, are they not like I don't know if Sydney can sing, but she likes to sing and dance, but she's not great at it.
Right.
As like, oh, she's a natural talent. You see kids her age who are really good. You're like, holy shit, that kid can sing or that kid can dance or whatever. She likes to draw. She loves to draw. She's really into that right now. And like cartooning. And oh, I would cool. say she's better than it than I was at that time. And I think I was kind of into that too. But I also deluded myself all the way through college that I was a better cartoonist than I was. And I had friends who were really good at it. And I could see that and go, oh, Bobby and James are much better at cartooning than I am. But I just thought, oh, well, I'm good too. I'm just the third best of this group and I'm fine with that. And that seems to be Sid's attitude too. And I love that.
That's a great attitude to have, because also you're young enough that you could end up being good at something too. Like, you know, things change, your voice drops.
Yes, but there's natural talents, John. And she is naturally, she's funny as shit, dude.
Right.
She, and
I know, I can like, say that from experience. Yeah.
Yeah. She could be a comedian is my humble opinion. And I'm not pushing her that way.
No, because you naturally, care about her.
And you don't have, but also with those kind of kids, like Andy Daly's kids the same way, that they're so funny. You don't have to
foster it.
Push them or encourage. It's just being a comedian and wanting to show off is natural. It's not like we have her in comedy classes. But basketball was surprising. And it wasn't, I wasn't good at it. And when she was good at it, we were like, oh. And when a kid sees they're good at something,
it means
they want to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it gives them self-esteem. And when you get to the age where you start to realize when you're not good at stuff, it's like, oh, I'm not so good at dancing, or I'm not so good at baseball. I am good at basketball. That gives me confidence, and I don't feel lost on the court, and that just snowballs.
Right.
And then all of a sudden she can, like, once we took her to this skill, fundamentals class. I don't know how old she was, but she was young, before the pandemic. And this coach just talked to everyone like they're in high school. And the age in girls, like I say, it's hard to get. Anytime there's a clinic, it's like girls from third grade to fucking high school. You know, it's not like you'd be just to get 12 girls. So he's like, go down the court, go between your legs, go behind your back, and ask her to do stuff she had never done before. You know, going behind her back in particular. And I just started laughing to myself. I'm like, oh my God, what's she going to do? But then she just looks at the girl beside her doing it. She figures it out. She does it. She can't do it. She loses the ball. She does it again. She loses the ball. Third time, she does it. And it sparks. And you see it.
That's so cool.
And I think I talked about earlier, you see the skip or the hop.
They start being a little lighter. They're visibly.
You see her go, yeah. Oh. And you recognize in your own kid of like, oh, you see that little joy of, oh, she really fucking loves learning what she just loved.
Yeah.
Because she thought she couldn't do it. She tried again. She could do it. Versus if she did that in gymnastics, she still wouldn't be able to do it on the fourth.
She might not ever get the round off. Yeah. And
no.
And then that.
Because it's not natural.
Right.
And so at a certain point, these kids start to obsess on their skill or whatever it is. If they are like, oh, I am much better and I do enjoy this.
Right.
And then that is when you get the option. I'm sure a lot of listeners are going, well, the answer is rec leagues are for fun. And travel teams are for the serious kids. And that is pretty much the way it goes. But
yeah, I mean, that's the obvious delineation that makes sense. And, you know, kids are, they're going to be like the more rec kids that are on the trip. That was like me. I was like a rec kid who was just good enough. And mostly everything for me was always social. People are like, we want Gabrus on our team. Like, we want Gabrus to be on the team with us. And going back to what you said before, I think the reason I found out I was funny was because I kept failing at all different sports. But one thing that I had in common is that people always liked to have me on their team. Like, even if I was bad, it was always good. Even coaches would like be like, oh, Gabe, like, you know, rolling their eyes at me and shit like that. I wore number 69 in my travel soccer league, and I was like 12 years old. Like, that's like so fucking gross and funny.
That is so funny. I guess I never even thought about comedy as a career until the end of college. So that never even occurred to me of like, oh, that skill could actually be, but you know.
Yeah, I was.
Sydney's,
I mean,
in Hollywood, kids that grew up in California are, yeah. What am I talking about anywhere these days? Because of TikTok, anyone can be a star anywhere. So
right. And not, I mean, I never so thought foreign. About comedy as a career either. I knew I wanted to like work in TV in some capacity. And that was just like an idea, like, you know, making something, because I was like a radio, TV, film major, like working in TV or movies seemed like the way to go. Didn't think it would be like acting in them ever until post college when I kept doing improv. I mean, I took level one in the summer in between junior and senior year of college because I was doing short form in college. And that's when I first started to be like, well, I don't know if this is like a path for a career, but this is fun. Then I'll go to New York City and work in TV and keep taking these improv classes because that's fun. And I never really like thought about them being overlap until I guess I started to feel it a little bit when you would like go to a UCB show and like know someone that was performing from TV and start to see the connection. But I was a PA on Best Week Ever and in level two with Paul Scheer, who was on Best Week Ever as talent. So he was teaching me improv, and then I saw
You can see the ladder.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. He's very funny in class, and like the stuff he's teaching us, you could sit down on Best Week Ever and riff. And I was like, oh, now I start to see, like, and then like that was a great example of like for me being like, oh yeah, that's how you do it.
Hey, can I go back to your question about what the shallow shit the kids are into too early? Yeah. So I follow all this basketball shit through the Razorbacks and football shit on Instagram. It's pretty much all I follow. They have ways of teaching kids just on Instagram through these videos, or I guess YouTube. And that's a culture I can't even imagine of like, I want to learn how to dribble behind my back. I'm going to go on TikTok or YouTube or Instagram and you can learn how to do it. So, and then branding is something that starts for sure in high school. If not before, if you want to go into college sports, right? So it's gross because it does seem like there's so, this is why it's gross. It's good in that they can make money off of it, the NIL, right? name image likeness, and that's the start of that, is branding yourself in high school. How am I going to sell my image commercially when I get into college, because I can literally make $1 million fucking.
Right. I could pay my way through college at minimum, you know, like, and then some. Yeah.
I can make more money than I possibly will as a rookie in a professional sport if I play it right. And some of these,
right.
And especially when it comes to women in basketball, like these women in the NCAA are choosing to stay in till their senior year because it's like, well, I don't know if I'm going to get any more higher exposure in the WNBA. And if I can get NIL money at fucking LSU, why shouldn't I stay until I'm a senior? And that's fucking great. The negative is, back to team and team sport, it's like it's all about me and it's so show. That takes away from... And there's
spirit
also,
of the game, not to be like the old man saying the cartoonish phrase, but that pushes brings it away from the spirit of teamwork.
Yeah, and there's and not everyone's making $1 million on that team, and that's life. Not everybody on the NFL team's going to make $50 million, just the quarterback. So when do we start preparing for life? But it is like, oh, okay, when does that start? Does that start in high school? That we start branding and it's all about me. And the sad truth is, dude, it starts when they're fucking 12 in these AAU leagues and getting Nike contracts. And the way I hear it, they don't give a shit who wins the game. It's all about stats and scoring and getting to the next game. And they just like the game's over. And I've been there. Sid's been on a travel team and it's, hers isn't this kind of serious, but I've witnessed these teams that play like three games and the game's over and you can't even tell the game's over. I'm like, is the game over? No one went,
no one's
hooray,
cheering.
Or we won, or great.
Interesting.
No one said congrats or good job. It's just fucking over. When's the next one? Like, where's the next pinball machine? It's fucking, you guys could care. It's joyless because they're like, well, what are my stats? And did I get some good video? And did we get some good clips?
Right. I played
for Instagram.
Oh, that dunk was cool. Like, well, that dunk, that move was cool, whatever. Yeah.
And the coaches aren't like, we got to get the whole team out there. He's like, oh, this is the golden child right here.
Well, this is like, I hope this kid gets drafted and buys me a sports car in 8 years.
With a lot. Yeah. And of course, I'm coming from an entitled place because a lot of these people, it is going to be a meal ticket. It is going to be a
right. It means their whole family. It means a little more, right?
And it is a job and a scholarship and getting in. Whereas with Sydney, we're not like, you need to play basketball so you can get into college. That's just not
right.
That's
exactly acknowledging that, like, we can get Sydney into college. Like, you know, like. It does. It's not
hopefully
her only
there won't
way.
Be college by that point. But yes, if there's still college around,
oh god,
kids still have to go to it. Then yes, no, she probably doesn't need a basketball scholarship. But
right,
it's so nasty seeing how the parents behave and the dog eat dog of it all, and the
because that
the
starts to feel a little bit away from, like, even though that is the reality. you feel like when you say, like, I think it's important for young people to play team sports, it's not to like learn that one person will be the best and you have to just kind of be there while they dominate. Like that, unfortunately, that is a lot what life can be like at too. So it is like a harsh learning lesson, but that's not what you're hoping for the experience.
What even about if you're the kids? Can I throw you an extreme opposite? The kid who only plays rec leagues, only has, does just arts and crafts stuff, doesn't enter into win or lose situations all the way through high school, and then goes to college, doesn't choose to participate because you choose what you do in college. He doesn't do that. And then they're in life.
And they've never pushed themselves or never had stakes in like an event. Yeah. Like never felt
experienced
failure.
Losing.
Yeah.
And rejection. Like you said, just trying out for the team and not getting on. And that's like getting a job or not. Like that's a serious emotion you have to go through.
Right.
So are they prepared for that? Or is it more shocking?
I didn't know the career I was getting into was like near constant rejection was a major part of it. Like I wasn't, I wasn't prepared for that. I mean, I wasn't aware of that, but I happened to accidentally be prepared for it because I still had fun when I lost, when I was the worst guy on the basketball team, when I was the lacrosse goalie, as scary as that was, I still had fun being on the team and going on the bus and practicing. So like, I felt that like I was still getting stuff out of it. Like I clearly was okay with sucking and losing. And I think that's what made me, I'm always down to try new shit. And I think that's why like improv excites me too. Cause you also just don't know the outcome. Like there's always a chance of failure in a fun way. Like there's something appealing about like, all right, I'm going to my first roller hockey practice. I'm barely good at skating. Here we go. All right. I'm stepping out on stage. I don't know who this Bill Burr character is, but I hope he fucking can handle a little yes anding.
It's Bill Burr's first improv class too.
Yeah, we're both in 101 together. Lucky teacher.
I don't know. I'm taking this. My manager told me to.
Vanessa Bayer was in my 101, and we didn't know we never knew that. Shannon O'Neill like eventually looked it up for us. I had no clue that. She was like, yeah, I took level one at UCB. And Shannon was like, when? And she's like, do you remember anyone? She's like, there was like this, I guess this is through SPO, so maybe it's apocryphal, but Vanessa was like, there was like this guy who was like a lifeguard and he always had flip flops and like board shorts on and he had blonde hair. He had bleached blonde hair and he was like really obnoxious, but kind of funny. And I was like, and Shannon's like, I'm going to look this up in the records, but I'm pretty sure that's John Gabriel. Like immediately. And that was me at 21 years old commuting into fucking 23rd Street.
Hey, you know, it's, the topic is children's sports, but we talk about trying stuff, trying a lot of stuff, failing, understanding you're failing, and then seeing that one thing that you're like, hey, I don't fail as much at this one thing.
Yeah.
Maybe I should focus on it more, but often you don't know what that is until you try it. Like, I didn't start playing guitar. Not that I'm good at it now, but if I enjoy it. And I didn't start until the Walk Hard movie. And if Judd hadn't made me do that, I never would have ever picked up an instrument again.
And now you enjoy playing the guitar. I've seen you do it as part of comedy
enjoy
shows.
Enjoy the fuck out of it. It's improved my life. Just emotionally.
And you would just never even tried to do it because it seems unattainable in a way, but
I was made to do it as a child by my mother. I took guitar lessons and hated it.
Oh,
we
that'll
did scales do it. And row, row, row your boat. I'm sure other guitar teachers could have been more inspiring, but why does it have to be children? I guess what I'm getting to. It's just like everyone should just keep trying fucking new and weird shit, even if it seems like you'll fail, because maybe one of those things you're like, hey, I'm actually the best one in class.
Yeah. Or and it, there's an element to life where you don't necessarily need to be good at something to really get something out of it.
Yeah.
Like to enjoy it, like
just to be able to pull it off.
Yeah. Having like I did that crazy relay race from Mount Hood to the coast. I'm not a runner. I hate running. I always used to say, I don't want to run unless I have a ball or I'm chasing someone who has a ball. And now I did this like thing that was just straight up running, and the accomplishment of it is unreal. And I was going to
personal best.
Yeah, I was going to bring this up earlier when you mentioned Sid learning the behind the back dribble. Like, I don't know what I feel like I tell this to a lot of people too, and it's just it's so stupid and simple and obvious, but to me running is something that like you're like, I can't run 1 mile. And then you try four times, and the fifth time you can. And then you're like, well, maybe I can run 1.5 miles. You're like, well, not these 3 times. But then the fourth time, then all of a sudden you're like, well, can I run? And then you're like, I used to think I couldn't run 1 mile. Now I'm running 6 miles because it's just adding a little more time, a little more mileage. And like, it's so basic. Incremental progression is what we call it in the powerlifting world and the bodybuilding world. But like, it makes total sense. And you're like, oh, and now I'm not good at running at all by any running standard. But for me, the fact that I could jog 3 miles without stopping if I had to right now is crazy to me. And that gives me that hop, that skip that you referenced.
So in any solo sport, you can find your personal best or even just the ability to do it. Just the ability to just, I can scuba dive or
right.
I can rappel.
Right. It gets
the ability
to be binary.
To learn to
it's
do
yes
it.
Yes or no. Yeah, exactly.
I don't have to be the best scuba diver, the best rappeller.
Right.
But
no.
Then there's, and I can play intramural soccer and I can find my level. I can play tennis. You have to find your level.
Yeah.
Like, it's no fun playing someone better or worse than you. Got to find your level. But hold on. Do we use sports metaphors? Every time I'm arguing, John, especially like an improv point, I always use sports metaphors. And then later I'm like, should I not use a sports metaphor? Because sports and arts are not the same.
No, they're
so
not.
So if I, doing exactly what we're talking about, so it's like, okay, well, I want to be a stand-up comedian. And I'll do it incrementally. And I'll do it 5 minutes every open mic.
Yeah.
You won't necessarily be running a mile.
Yeah, well, the thing about that's where we get into subjectivity and objectivity. Like, I shot the ball and went in the hoop. That is 2 points.
The mile
I told a joke.
Took me 7 minutes to run.
Yeah, exactly. I even without the minutes on it, you could just say, like, I left, I ran a half mile away, and I came back
a
half
mile.
Yeah, that's a mile. But you can go up there and go, I did do 5 minutes of comedy. But it's not a binary like some of these sports things are of like you did it or you didn't do it. Like,
yeah. And other people may say that was comedy. You're just saying
right.
facts or telling your day.
Because I could technically sit down and draw. I like to draw, but I'm very, very bad at it. It doesn't look like anything I want. It doesn't even come out the way I want it to. But I do still enjoy it sometimes.
And drawing can, and these are different arts too, because drawing can, you can draw in the woods and no one ever, a tree can fall in the woods. But comedy, you can't do stand up. It doesn't count in your bedroom.
Right. It requires
and improv
an audience.
Yeah. Doesn't count in your basement, really. So, and you can,
right,
go,
you can
well,
paint
my
a
improv
million paintings.
Team went up and we had a great time. Were we as good as that team on Saturday? No, I know we weren't, but I don't care. We had a good time.
Yeah, that works.
That works. We bombed, but I had a good time.
Did the whole team have a good time? That's the, I feel like, did the audience, well, that's when you get to something that requires an audience, that starts to change too. Because like, if your intramural volleyball team sucks, but you have fun out there playing, you're not, like, it's not required a reaction. Like, if you were a painter or a sculptor, you could do that all in your house, right? But if you're a playwright, you
got to
eventually
put it up. Okay, if I said to you, if I got
up.
Introduced to you at a party, you'd know me. I said, I'm a baseball player. No, I'd say, let's get in the, somewhat real. I said, this is Matt. He's a tennis player. You would think, what would you think? You'd think, well, I haven't seen him on TV, so he must be like one of those guys in like the 300s. Like he's ranked,
or I'd be like,
but you never.
Maybe he's like a tennis pro but calls himself a player, like he coaches tennis.
Even
like,
that would be obnoxious,
right? But that's what
a player.
Yeah.
And then it's like,
But you can
if
say
you said
you're a comedian.
I'm a stand-up comedian, no one blinks if all I've done is bombed.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. Because it is weirdly like a state of mind. It's like a proclamation.
It feels like you should have to make people laugh.
Right. Yeah.
Or you declare yourself.
Well, there's weirdly the binary of comedy. Like, yes. Did people. Well, I would say.
And drama doesn't even have that. Yes, yeah. I'm a great actor. I've done 20 plays. Well, you could have sucked in every one of them.
But if you've done a play in front of an audience, that's made you, you've acted. If
yeah,
you're like,
that's true. But what if they hated you and you suck though? Because in comedy, if it was a comedy,
bad.
You would know.
Right, right. You acted
in the
poorly.
Drama, you would know. You'd be like, oh, I don't know. Or they seem mad afterwards. Drama.
I feel like you might know. I feel like if you're,
know.
Although if you're a really bad dramatic actor acting in a play, you might not have like the self-awareness to notice. Like you might
yeah,
not.
It's like that movie, The Room. There's yeah. got to be that all over LA, but comedy don't lie. That's what's great about it. And also
yeah, you
when
get
you're also
out.
When you're feeling down, like when you feel like the rest of my team doesn't think I'm funny or I don't think I'm funny, like the next audience will tell you when where and
right where they we agree. Like you are
yeah
not.
We agree or no you actually are funny and then you go oh fuck Fox for not putting me on their pilot.
Yeah dude, I mean I talk about live comedy in reference to a career in Hollywood all the time in that it's the saving grace of like, I am good at this. Like early on in my career, Tiffany would be like, we'd be watching something. I'd be like, I auditioned for this and this guy got it. And she's like, he's not, you're so much funnier than him. And I go, yeah, but that's not what Hollywood is looking for. It's a complicated sauce of what they're looking for.
I love when comedic actors... And they're not. And you notice I don't say comedians, because we do comedic acting, but we're comedians.
Yeah, we.
And when I see a comedic actor on like a show, like at South by Southwest or some festival or something, and they'll just stick like, this guy's in a sitcom, so we're gonna put him on the show. Like all he has to do is walk up to the mic and wave, everyone's gonna go nuts. But they in the green room. You can always tell they feel a certain anxiety, if I'm going to generalize.
Right, yeah.
Of, well, I'm a funny guy, too.
Yeah.
I'm as funny as you guys.
Right.
That's the subtext, listeners. And I'm not making that up.
That's
a certain
vibe.
That's for real.
And I also like when you meet some of those people and they're like, they don't know who... I'm going to use me specifically, but I feel like this could be a little universal for more people. I run into these people. They don't know who I am per se, but I know who they are.
Yeah.
And they're like, I'm funny because I've booked and busy and you know me from all this stuff. And then we're hanging out and I'm being so fucking funny. And they're like, I could see it in their face. Like, okay, all right. I'm going to text you with who one of these people are as soon as we get off here.
I got a couple in my mind too. And I love getting on stage and killing and them not being able to follow me. That's the best thing in show business where you're like, well, I'm going to make it where this guy is going to wish he wasn't on this show.
Yeah. Fame can juice you up and give you some help you get graded on a curve, but it can't whole create laughter. Like
I think
you can't,
Seinfeld
like,
says in that documentary of his, it'll give you like 2 minutes. Like the fame will give you 2 minutes, and after that, you got to say something funny.
After that, you need jokes. Yeah, that's Comedian, the one with him and Orny Adams.
Yeah, yeah, I love
I haven't
that
seen that
documentary.
In forever.
I haven't.
I
either,
loved
but
it.
I loved
when
it
I saw
at the time.
It. So awesome. Speaking of creating our own comedy, Matt Besser.
Yeah.
Tell my listeners a little bit about the new. This will come out in like October at some point. Let them know about the new Improv for Humans setup and what's going on over there.
Great. Well, October, get tickets to Live at the Ice House Improv for Humans. We've done a couple of great shows there. We're doing one on October 28th. But improvforhumans.com, we have our own platform now, no longer on Earwolf, going solo. And have our own, it's called Memberful, Brett says no one knows what Memberful is, so I should stop saying that. But it's like Patreon. It's our own. What's the general word? Our own paywall that we have.
Yeah, I don't know what. I don't know. There should be a word like the way Q-tip is like a cotton swab, you know, like or rollerblades or inline skates. Like Patreon, like kind of gobbled up that. Like, oh, it's
yes,
like Patreon.
Exactly. They're the Xerox.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. Oh, that's. I mean, I've been casually highfalutinly calling that stuff digital vaudeville, because it's like your little gag packet that you carry from like club to club with your props and your gimmicks. But it's people come to you and see what you do there.
I fucking love that. And we have Improv for Humans without the ads, of course. But we also have my Professor Besser feed where I go down deep on improv. Deep dive in on improv, just the skill of it. And
oh, cool.
Like I break down Improv for Humans scenes, for instance. I had a request for Fat Crackers from the trilogy. I said, narrow it down. I'll do that. But like, I'll take a scene and go, this is what they're doing here. This is how they're initiating. This is how they're heightening. This is how they're exploring.
This is why you might find this funny like, it's not just because the word choice, but because of that's cool.
So I think that helps people improvise to hear that it's not just random people going, now I'm going to say something funny, because I think that is how people think improv.
When you start to be able to see that as a viewer or a listener, however you want to phrase it, an audience member on improv, once you start to be able to see that, that's when you know you're getting it a little bit, when you're like, no, what Neil Casey did there was not just funny because he has an interesting voice, and that was a funny predicate or specific at the end of the sentence. The move he made brings, like, he's playing.
Yeah,
in the, you know.
I wonder through osmosis, there's over 600 Improv for Humans episodes. Like, for someone who's never taken a class, could they just, out of just listening to 100 episodes and just hearing the patterns of improv, get it? Like, hear how a story gets broken down, how initiation comes out of that story.
It could. It is one of those art forms that you need to do in order to, like, really learn. Like, but I do think you could probably get something from, if you took your time to go, like, what did I find funny about that? Not like, you know, I mean, like, people will be like, everything Colton Dunn says is funny. And that is true. But why do you find everything that Colton Dunn says funny? Like, that's like you have to
learn.
And
what order is he saying it? And why is he saying it in that order?
And why did this? And then if you're a listener and you're discussing, you'd have to go, why is this response here funnier than a couple of lines ago? And it's from the same character in the same world. Why do I like this one more? And then you have to like think on it and go like, oh, it's playing the game harder, or, oh, it was, everyone was playing the game really hard and this slightly tweaked it, but I see what they were like. What about it made you like it? Like, I think
what I'm finding is because the first request, or one of the first requests, was for this scene that Paul Russ did, and it was such a Paul Russ scene. It's called Tom Petty's Beard, and the scene, Tom Petty's beard just falls off, according to Paul Russ' character. And it's such a crazy move at that point in the scene. And how we justified it and what that became, it kind of became like an epic scene on Improv for Humans that the listeners know, just because it's so uniquely Paul Rust.
Right.
And there's so many scenes that are uniquely John Gabris, because you're putting your own sauce on it. So I like to kind of examine, like, what is it they do, and why do we love it? And like, you could criticize silliness, but it's also so awesome with certain people. Like, people are silly and I hate it, and there's certain people silly and I love it. And it's like, why is that?
Well, because they're playing silly within the framework in a way that works.
How are they doing that makes it good versus trying to wreck the show and undermine it? We can text about those names too. No, we already have.
Where are people go to improvforhumans.com? That's the member full link.
Yeah, only $40 for a whole year.
Oh.
$4 a month, $40 for a whole year.
Oh, hell yeah.
Get on. It's Improv for Humans. Get it?
Nice. And Professor Besser, that sounds fun. Are you doing also breaking down like comedy pieces that you really liked and stuff outside of improv on that?
Yes, I invite you to greatest comedy of all time. I send a list of four things that I think, I say things, I don't narrow it down, but like I did one with Steve Agee, and he picked Norman Feld's smile when he broke the fourth wall in Three is Company is one of the greatest comedy moments of all time.
Interesting.
And
like
we really
that.
Analyzed it and how much he did it and how it evolved.
Oh, cool. I like
through the
that.
Seasons. Because at first it was like organic and natural, and it became something the audience wanted, and they had a special camera for it. It was fucking bizarre.
Oh, that's awesome. I you know, I do want to come on to that too. I got a lot to talk about there.
Yeah, and I got another show where I've digitized all these old VHS tapes of comedy from the alt scene in the 90s. Some of the stuff I'm like, holy shit, I forgot about this. Holy shit, I used to be skinny.
Hey, that's where I lucked out. Never skinny, dog. Although I do look at old pictures of myself and be like, I can't believe I was like thinking I was fat then. I didn't even know what was possible. The sky's the limit, dog. Improvforhumans.com. Check out Matt Besser's shit, please. And while if you're getting involved in the paywalled action, get on actionboys.biz as well. We're doing new stuff over there. I got a new tier. We're we have some free episodes at free.actionboys.biz, so check them out there. And keep your eyes peeled for some upcoming live dates from your boy. I'll be posting them on social media. You know that. I guess if you're listening to this podcast, maybe you also follow me on social media, but I'll plug it officially when I get some dates and times. Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow,
body blow,
someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to like see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room here.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dark.
I'm your dad.
Action Boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it! Come on! Do it now!